Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll hear from Native American flutist Stephen Rushingwind. Steve's no stranger to KVCR, and with his latest CD, Keeper of Secrets, Steve's been nominated in five categories for the upcoming 18th Annual Native American Music Awards: Artist of the Year, Flutist of the Year, Best New Age Recording, Best Instrumental Recording, and Best Video. We'll hear about Keeper of Secrets and much more later in the program. First, we have Sue Rajinsky, director of Place Performance and organizer of Trolley Dances Riverside, an event involving ticket holders being, well, trolleyed around Riverside with stops around the city to see dance. There seem to be several agencies involved here, with Riverside Transit Agency, Riverside Arts Council, Riverside City College Dance, and Place Performance. And this is all revolving around trolley dances. So let's start with that, this trademarked event from Gene Isaacs in San Diego, 20 years old some now. Can you talk about that first and foremost?
Absolutely. In 2011, I got a phone call from Gene Isaacs in San Diego. She had received my name from Wendy Rogers, who was a professor at the time at UC Riverside in dance. And Gene said that they had received funding from the Irvine Foundation and that the Irvine Foundation funding had encouraged projects to move toward the Inland Empire. And so Riverside was chosen as a city that also happened to have trolley cars. And that's how it began in 2011.
And the event itself, what Gene Isaacs started, what happens with trolley dances? What was going on when Gene Isaacs created this in San Diego itself? People are going around the city and stopping at various places. How does this work?
Great question. In San Diego, they ride public transportation, so they ride their metropolitan transit system. So they get on the train, the public transit system, and they ride from one stop to another location. And then when they get off the train, they are ushered possibly down a street to a public site in order to watch a dance. So basically, the train transports the audience from site to site.
Okay. And so this is something that Gene Isaacs started some 20 years ago in San Diego. It's now gone to, I believe, also San Francisco, and now Trolley Dances Riverside.
We started in 2012.
Okay.
We skipped 2 years. We did it 3 years in a row, and we are about to do our fifth event.
Let's talk briefly, before we get into a little bit more about what's happening with Trolley Dances Riverside, let's talk about Place Performance. This is one of the entities involved in bringing this together, and you are a director of Place Performance. Can you tell us what that is, please?
Definitely. So Place Performance evolved in 2010 when several dance artists and educators came together with the notion that we wanted more things to happen for local choreographers and dancers. Hence, Place evolved. There were about 14 of us that met, and then there were four core members that started the entity: Julie Freeman, April Rhodes, Alexis Weisbrod, and myself. We brought it to fruition, and we started an event called Between the Tables at Back to the Grind Coffee House. Between the Tables happened because we were looking for dance spaces in order to show work, possibly similar to what Gene Isaacs was doing in San Diego. Was where else can we make dances happen? It sometimes costs a lot of money to rent a theater in order to show your dances. So Place started actually in a restaurant, and then we tried out a coffee house in Banning called The Haven. And then eventually we ended up at Back to the Grind, which is a coffee house in Riverside, and they're very supportive of the arts. And it was actually one of the people at Back to the Grind who said, we need some dance here.
Nice. And is this still going? What's happening with Between the Tables?
Between the Tables, still happening. We had one on September 16th, and at one point we were doing it every third month, the third Sunday at 3 p.m., but just in terms of organizing it and pulling it together, we've decided just to have that happen twice a year. So that happens in March and in September.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, now this may be a good time to mention, for more information about the event we're talking about, Trolley Dances Riverside, that is quite simply trolleydancesriverside.com. How about information for Between the Tables and future events on that? Do you have a website contact for that as well?
Thank you for asking. Yeah. Everybody can go to placeperformance.org.
Ah, okay. Simply enough, placeperformance.org. This is going to be happening on October 13th. It'll be running every hour on the hour from 11 to 4. So as a ticket holder, what happens? You get your tickets, and then it starts where and goes where?
We're going to be starting at Arlington High School in Riverside, which is on 2951 Jackson Street. I'm recommending that people park in the parking lot at the high school that's actually on Lincoln Avenue.
And will there be a performance at that spot, or is this really just kind of where you muster and get on the bus, or trolley, as it were, and then go to the first performance spot?
It is the first spot. So this year we're very excited because the choreographer working at Arlington High School is an alumni of the high school. She's choreographing a piece with the Arlington High School dance team, and they will open the show right there at the high school. Then the ushers will usher the audience along the sidewalk to the first bus stop, where they will load onto two trolley cars that are parking and waiting for us at the bus stop. Then we drive along Lincoln Avenue, and we're going to turn right on Van Buren. And I'm going to keep the second site a surprise.
Okay.
But there are four sites in total, five dances. Typically, we bring in local choreographers, and this year we have two out-of-town guests. We have Jay Carlone from Los Angeles and Wade Madsen from Seattle.
Something else that was mentioned, that with trolley dances, that each of the dances, it's choreographed specific to each location. So without giving the top secret location for the second site along this October 13th event, can you talk about how a dance may be choreographed to a specific urban setting versus, say, you know, being on stage? What type of different performance might we see if it's in some, alleyway or a natural amphitheater or anything other than your three-quarter thrust or proscenium stage or, you know, whatever?
Yeah, we're calling it site-specific choreography, which is a form that addresses the site specifically. And the choreographer gets to decide, do they want to utilize the architecture as a point of inspiration? Do they want to use the history of that location or the culture of the area? And so the choreographer decides how they're going to go about that before making their dance. And each choreographer works very differently with site-specific choreography.
Will these performances have musical accompaniment, or will some be silent? How will this part work since, again, we're talking about several different, I believe you said four different spaces.
Right, exactly. Some of the spaces will have speaker systems set up and recorded sound. I do know that Julie Simon will be bringing live music in that her dancers are also drummers. So we'll be hearing live music at that site.
Fantastic. And again, there's going to be four different places, and some of these dances we will be observing as if on a stage. We will be separated by that fourth wall, but then I guess some of these, hopefully they may be a little bit more immersive. Can you talk about these four different spaces, or, well, three of them, since one is a surprise?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was able to peek in on a couple of rehearsals, and it seems that two of the choreographers are working with the idea that the audience might follow the performers so that the site is so large that they're going to use different aspects of the site. So the audience would be traveling along the site with the dancers, not following the movement.
Gotcha. A truly follow the leader sort of thing. Okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow, this sounds really cool. And this started in 2011 with a phone call or a letter, and the growth of it over the years. Talk about what it was just in the beginning versus what it is now, and maybe what you hope to see next year when you do it.
Thank you for that. Yeah, when we started out, it was Mark Haynes from Riverside City College Dance and I met for coffee because they were the institutional entity that Jean Isaacs had reached out to, the dance program at RCC.
Okay.
We sat and met for coffee, and the first year it was really sort of figure this out as you go. Choose choreographers is always the fun part. Have an audition and bring dancers in. Some of the challenges are going and finding different locations and then getting the permission to use locations for dance. And we're always talking about how it will highlight a business or a neighborhood. And what's cool in Riverside is that the event gets to go along a bus line. So we can choose a different bus line each year. And that's something we do in conversation with our contact from the Riverside Transit Agency. Last year, the Riverside Arts Council came on board as a partner, offering some help with PR and marketing and additional things to support us along the way. And I think that the RCC partners and the other members of Place Performance really believe in having this project in Riverside because we like how it connects different dancers from, say, the UCR dance program, the RCC dance program, community dancers from local studios. This event provides a bridge for those different organizations and entities, and we really hope that it will sustain and maintain in the future. We have a big budget because we offer honorariums for dancers and choreographers, and then we have costs that incur. So each time it's a little bit of a challenge to kind of break even, but we're hoping that this will continue in Riverside and that it will continue to provide an opportunity for local dancers.
I hope so. It sounds like not only a wonderful performance opportunity for spectators, but also a wonderful interconnectivity, this wonderful bridge that you were just speaking of. That sounds really nice. So for tickets, again, is it just simply going to trolleydancesriverside.com?
Absolutely. That'll get you right there, the About page.
Excellent. And then for Place Performance, more information on Place Performance and other events associated with the group, the website for there, one more time, please.
Placeperformance.org.
Yeah, couldn't be easier. Okay, we've been speaking with Sue Rajinsky, Director of Place Performance and Event Organizer for Trolley Dances Riverside. Again, that's coming up October 13th, going every hour on the hour, starting at 11, going through 4 o'clock. Sue, thank you so much for your time. This sounds really exciting, and I look forward to it.
Thank you. We hope you can come, too.
Absolutely. That was Sue Rajinsky, Director of Place Performance and Organizer of Trolley Dances Riverside, coming up October 13th. Again, placeperformance.org or trolleydancesriverside.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. For the rest of the program now, it's music in conversation with Native American flutist Stephen Rushingwind. His latest CD is Keeper of Secrets and received nominations for 5 categories in this year's NAMMY Awards. We'll have music from that disc playing during the entirety of this interview. There's paintings, workshops, performances, all of this at StephenRushingwindMusic.com.
Yeah.
Also Twitter and Instagram and all that.
Yeah.
Do you have an active MySpace as well out there?
Not That's a good one.
Nobody, yeah.
I think I have my very first album on MySpace. MySpace.
I think it is still active just for, you know, a lot of more musicians use it. But
Mine's active. I've looked it up a few times. It's funny because I have stuff so long ago.
Yeah.
A different life.
Well, we will be speaking primarily about Keeper of Secrets.
Okay.
And with that, High Spirits Flutes.
Yeah.
So this is an endorser of you, and they produced Keeper of Secrets.
Yes.
Just talk about the whole involvement, you even came to be with them.
Well, it's interesting because with Odell Borg, High Spirit Flutes, I've known them, of them for many, 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 many years. In fact, my first flute was from Odell.
My very first flute.
It was from his son. I bought it off his son.
Okay.
And which is really cool because I sit down and I have dinner with his son and we laugh about it because I bought my very first flute from him. And that was back about 12, 13, 14 years ago.
Whatever. Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. And I always wanted to meet him. And now he's like my brother now. I go stay at his guest house. And you know, it's just kind of weird how things swing around.
So is High Spirits Flutes, is this a place that deals with the industry or is it a shop that you can just
go into? It's in Patagonia, Arizona.
Okay, Arizona.
Yeah,
okay.
That's all right. It's a huge shop. He's got shops and different departments. And people go there to visit They have showrooms. You know, they can buy right there if they want.
Gotcha. Okay. Are you officially endorsed by High Spirits then?
Definitely.
How do endorsements work? And maybe this is different for different types of things, but are you given flutes with the understanding that you mentioned the name? Or?
Yes. I have. Matter of fact, I just received 3 flutes yesterday in the mail.
Okay.
All my flutes. I play exclusively his.
Oh, I had made a note that, okay, if folks see Steve play live somewhere, he's got this tree with, I don't know, easily 16, 18 flutes maybe.
That's about right.
So I really had a note that you have too many flutes to play exclusively High Spirits.
It's taken a little time to accumulate everything that's High Spirits. I've still had to use other brands, other people's flutes until I get the one I need from him.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I just received a D flute yesterday, D minor, and a bass flute. And now I can put away the flute that I used to use that wasn't his brand and use his flute. So,
okay.
I mean, so it took some time, but I'm now, I think after that, I am totally 100% geared up with all his flutes.
I had no idea that you even could have that many. Wow.
We're going to be doing a signature flute down the road, too. We're going to have one that's with my name on it.
What would that be? That's something else that I've always wondered. You know, certain people like Steve Vai, he's got the way that you can hit, you know, the little grip area and all this. So Steve Vai, now Steve Rushingway.
Well, with me, it'll be something that I play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's an F sharp or something like that. And my style of flute, I like it a little dressy, but not too much, but I don't like it too plain. The fetish will be something more towards the Rushing Wind feel.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay.
Matter of fact, my daughter is the one that came up with the design.
Really?
Yeah.
Sienna?
Sienna.
Oh,
yes.
Nice. Nice. And we've got a song that I would presume is named for her later on. We'll hit that after a bit. But.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, cool. Now let's go ahead and talk about Keeper of Secrets.
Yeah.
5 nominations for this year's NAMMY. So, I mean, congratulations again on this. You've had nominations and wins in the past.
Yes.
But let's talk for just a moment about how this disc came together. We talked about your association with High Spirits Flutes. Talk about how this disc came together. You mentioned it like going back to square one.
Yes. This was something that I've been wanting to do for a long time. It was going back to basics. I've done so many albums collaborating with different guitarists and pianists and things like that. And I wanted something to go back to my very first album, which was Cloud Runner, that I did, I think, 2007 or something like that. But it was a year where I just thought I'd try it out. And it came out pretty well. It's actually, to be honest with you, it's funny because it's still one of my number one sellers out there. But I wanted to make something in that style, but being advanced, as you know, these years later, I wanted to be more sophisticated. So what I did is I came up with this idea and I pitched it to Odell Borg of High Spirit Flutes, and he said, "Yeah, this is a great idea." And then he started talking about incorporating my paintings because I'm an artist as well. And then got a hold of, you know, Daniel Wanacott, and it just kind of just flowed right perfectly to where we're at.
I'm glad you mentioned that you are a two-dimensional artist as well. So let's talk about the packaging of the disc. This is something that's really cool, not just to look at, but I think a really wonderful gesture on Odell's part.
Yeah, you know, he financed the whole thing. And what was really cool was this bird that I painted, you know, I did this painting a couple of years ago. And I always wanted to use it for something like this, a project. When they were talking about what we were going to use for the cover, I mean, it was a given. I have the cover. So they go, "Okay, what is it?" So I sent it to them. They're like, "Oh, wow, that's perfect.
That's it.
You know, that's it." And it's a painting. It's only an 8x8 size painting, and it's in the collection of Odell. I gave him as a present.
Oh, wow, nice. And this is a crow or a raven on the front?
It's a raven, yeah.
Okay. I'm speaking with Stephen Rushingwind with music from his latest disc, Keeper of Secrets. More at StephenRushingwindMusic.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Now, inside, we also have some of your paintings. So not only do you have the painting for the cover of Keeper of Secrets, but you also have some of your other artwork in there. And I do have questions about your artwork, but we'll hit that a little bit later because we are primarily speaking about Keeper of Secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Touching briefly, though, you've had nominations and wins in the past. What were some of those? We're talking about the NAMMY Awards.
Yeah, the NAMMYs. I've had, I don't even know how many nominations I've had. Really, to be honest with you, there's been so many. But I know it was with Rushing Wind and Mucklow. Me and Michael, we won 2 NAMMY Awards. The last one was in 2014. So a lot of the other albums have been nominated. The most I've ever been nominated for, I think, has been 3. So this time it's 5, which is, I'm really surprised. Excited, actually, too. It's amazing how it just, I wasn't expecting that. And then we had the video of the song Rushing Wind. And to get a nomination in the video category, it's next to impossible because there's so many people doing videos now.
Sure.
And a lot of rappers, a lot of hip-hop artists, they get first priority. It's just what's hip out there right now, you know. And I understand that. I'm 58 years old, competing with a 20-some-year-old hip-hop artist. I mean, it's tricky, but I know that, and I know where I'm at, so I'm okay with it. But all of a sudden, there I was. You know, I got nominated for best performance in a music video, and I'm like, what?
Yep.
I'm excited as that as much as Artist of the Year and Flutist of the Year. You know.
It's a cool-looking video, too, and this year, again, the nominations, Artist of the Year, Flutist of the Year, Best New Age Recording, Best Instrumental Recording, and Best Video Performance.
Right.
The video, as we mentioned, is for the song Rushing Wind. We see JC arriving on the railroad tracks and all this, so...
It's really interesting.
Talk us through that.
My wife, Susan, it's her baby.
Okay.
She came up with a storyboard. She had a vision. She knew exactly what she wanted. And it was really interesting because I'm just like, she started pitching it to me. And I'm thinking, okay, so you want desert and you want cold, you want steel and you want wood. What is this all about? And it's the yin yang is basically what it is. And she wanted to show how you can have coldness, but with warmth. So when you see the video, I'm in sunshine. I'm like in the desert. The sun's on my face. I'm playing a wooden flute. And then JC's over in New Jersey.
This is the cellist.
The cellist, which is my keyboardist on the Native Groove Band. But he's over there playing a steel cello and snowing. So it's like, he's in an urban area. He's got graffiti behind him. And he's playing the cello. And he's on the railroad tracks. And he's walking towards me. It's almost like we're colliding with each other. And it's kind of like a feel of that's my past coming into my present. And even though it's not me walking towards it, it's still, I get that sense. It's me coming in another time period and colliding with myself in this time. And Jonah Mulski, he's the one that did the actual putting it all together. And Eddie Gonzalez did the video of us in California. And then JC did his own video out in New Jersey. Jonah put it all together out in Mexico, actually.
Okay. I find it really incredible that these two shots, you in the desert and JC, the cellist, in New Jersey, and then these videos being put together, and this speaks to how the song, I suppose, came together. The theme that the cello introduces and then it repeats.
Yeah, exactly.
Was this how it truly started?
No, actually it didn't. It was really kind of funny because I got a hold of JC. He's masterful. He did such beautiful writing. And I told him, make me something really nice and mellow. Give me something soft with the cello so I could play some beautiful flute music behind it. And that's how it started out.
You asked for a hook.
Something loving and,
Right.
and it's just what I wanted at first.
A gentler, kinder
hook. A gentler and kind feeling. So then he sends me this. And he sends me this whole song that it's like, there was no room for the flute. I'm listening to this. It's beautiful. I told him, but what am I going to do with it? So Daniel Wanacott, he's a great producer and engineer. He took it and he goes, okay, you know what? We can cut half of it out of it and let's use the basic hook on the song, which we did. So we took it and then I composed the flute to it and we came up with this song and it was instant. I fell in love with it instantly.
Yeah.
It just lent to this feeling I had that I've always wanted to express. And we got it out there. And I was like, wow. I go, this is pretty incredible.
And so how did you end up with JC or contacting him? Or how did this musical relationship come together?
Well, JC's a friend of Nelson Reels. Nelson. He's my percussionist.
Mm-hmm.
And Nelson, when we were touring, we needed a keyboardist. Our keyboardist that we had on Fuego, he got really busy with his other group that he had, and he couldn't travel. So we acquired JC, and he learned the songs instantly. You know, last year we got to, you know, we did the Dinner in the Canyons for the Kuya Nation out here in Palm Springs. We did that gig, and he went with us to Florida and Tennessee and places like that. So he was able to like kind of like fill in, but he learned the song so well, and he's got a different style. It's very flamboyant. So it kind of like morphed into this really cool sound because he adds a lot to the music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's not just this one other instrument. There's always something with you. There's layering and textures mm-hmm. and things introduced. Was the percussion, by the way, was that part of what he initially gave to you where it starts off with a boom, boom?
That was something that that was my deal.
Okay, okay.
That was me. I wanted that sound. And to me, it's something that I've always wanted. I love to hear the drums come yeah. in little by little. That was something that I wanted. And that had nothing to do with the cello. It was more of my envisioning. That's because I wanted that. I like that powerful sound. If we're going to have a powerful song, got to have some powerful percussions in there, some drums.
Absolutely. Nice. Let's talk about Rushing Wind as not just the name for the song. We'll address that in a second. But let's talk about Rushing Wind as a name, and not the song, but your name.
Right.
You're actually Stephen Luis Ruiz. Do you mind addressing briefly the government name versus what's your given name later?
Yeah.
Through ceremony?
Stephen Luis Ruiz is, that's, you know, name I was born with legally. My mom named me after Robert Louis Stevenson.
Oh, cool. Hey, I didn't know.
Didn't get the Robert in there, but okay. But it was interesting because as I was probably maybe two when I just started to learn how to talk, I was one who talked too much. And I mean, there would be times where we would be someplace and they would leave me out in the waiting room. And by the time they came out, the people next to us say, I know where you guys live. I know your phone number. I mean, I know everything about you guys. And it's because I talk too much. And so I was given Rushing Wind, and that was a given name to me that I didn't like it, uh-huh. you know. And I, as growing up, I really tried to change it because my brothers would make fun of me. They would call me something else other than Rushing Wind.
Okay.
You get what I'm driving? Yeah. Anyway, so then I went ahead and I wanted Running Wolf or something like that.
Oh, sure,
you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, thinking that sounds more masculine, you know.
Yep.
But I tried it and they're like, you can't change your name. You know, so I'm pretty much like, okay, fine. I just kept Rushing Wind back on.
Let's look at Rushing Wind as a song title. Did you say earlier that you didn't want that initially?
The name of the album, Rushing Wind, that wasn't my idea. That was Odell. Odell, you know, he says, I believe we should call this album Rushing Wind because of the fact that it's got your painting, it's about you. This album is you. And I came up with all kinds of different names. He kept on asking, you know, no, it's going to be Rushing Wind.
Wait, so it's not Keeper of Secrets?
Oh, it's Rushing Wind, Keeper of Secrets.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
But the title of the album is Rushing Wind, and it's Keeper of Secrets.
All right.
And that's basically what the Raven or the Crow, I guess some people would call it the Crow. The Crows are known for the Keepers of Secrets.
You mentioned Nelson Rios. We were just speaking about JC, the cellist, a friend of Nelson, and Nelson does appear on this disc.
Yes.
Which track?
Nelson appears on a song called The Dance of the Veils.
Ah, okay.
And we did just flute and drum in that song.
Oh,
it's a really
nice,
cool.
Nice.
It's a really cool song. I use a Middle Eastern style flute on that, and it's got a nice, like a belly dancer type feel.
Mm.
It's total Middle Eastern.
Listening to KVCR, it's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Stephen Rushing Wind. His latest CD, Keeper of Secrets, was nominated for 5 awards in the upcoming 18th Annual Native American Music Awards. Artist of the Year, Flutist of the Year, Best New Age Recording, Best Instrumental Recording, and Best Video for the song called Rushing Wind. More with Steve in just about a minute. Back now to conversation with Native American flutist Stephen Rushingwind and music from his newest disc, Keeper of Secrets. Were the songs on this disc composed for this disc?
Or, yes.
Okay. It wasn't a case of you had some songs that, oh, here's a use for them.
No.
Okay, so then how did something like that work? I mean, did you have some sort of an underlying theme in mind or a feel? You said you wanted to go back to basics on that. And is that pretty much the how this one happened?
Yes, that's how this one happened. The song titles, you know, of course, I always get help from my wife, Susan, on those because she's got a good mind when it comes to that. And we sit there and we talk about it. But some of the music, especially Rushingwind, that was a given before we even started the song to the recording. But, you know, we had the Dance of the Veils, and, you know, there's a Tokowitz, which is, you know, it's a god from the Kuya people, and he's not a very good one either. He's kind of mean. At Tokowitz Canyon. There's a whole story. If you can't get a chance, Google it. It's amazing. We have Kuya Canyons, because I played there last year, and it's absolutely so spiritual and beautiful that I think everybody should at least go there once to see it. It's up in Palm Springs, way up in the canyons. It's very, very spiritual.
And this is your ancestry also, right, Kuya?
They're like our cousins. I'm from San Diego. We're from the Kuya people from on the beach, on the ocean. We're Kuya.
Gotcha.
And these are desert Kuya people. But they've kind of adopted me, kind of like, you know, because I'm performing there again in November with them. So I'm always got something going. I did some music for some of their documentaries and things like that. And then, of course, I have Sienna Breeze, which is my daughter.
I always
throw in a Sienna song in her somewhere.
You know what? I'm going to be going through the discs that I have of yours now, and I'm going to have to check on that. So is that in name alone? This I did actually have this written down before you brought it up. Sienna Breeze, is it in name alone, or is there something in the song that is evocative of her?
It is. It's a solo flute song. There's no accompaniment. It's just total flute. And, you know, Sienna's had some pretty big bumps in her life the last couple of years and losing her mother and things like that. So this was kind of like she's doing so good. She's working her way out of things. And she's an amazing kid. I'll just say something really quick. You know, it's been 2 years since her mother passed away. And I talked to her about it. And I said, you know, how do you feel? Do you need to go with some therapy some more? And she just flat out told me, she said, Dad, you know, I can't live my life being sad. I have to move on. You know, I can't live like that. I miss my mom so much, but I cannot be sad. I got to live and I got to be happy. And I mean, I wish I could be that way.
Yeah.
This is a 12-year-old kid that lost her kid when she was 10. I'm learning a lot from her. So a lot of stuff that I do, like seeing a breeze meaning not that she's breezing through anything, but it's more of like a refreshment feel.
Ah, okay.
Because when she talks to me, because, you know, I lost my brother just a year, not even a year ago. Mm. And he's my oldest brother. And he was like another father to me. So I'm learning from her how to deal with my brother's death, which is quite interesting. Because I'm a lot older than she is.
Yeah, I'd say that is really nice. We often talk about the innocence of a child, but not necessarily the wisdom. And that's incredible. Sienna, shout out. I've never said those words, but there it is.
There it is.
Shout out to Sienna. You mentioned that your wife, Susan, is a large part of naming the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And were they all, I believe, except for Rushingwind, were they all named after they were recorded? Or were there some that you knew what they would be and then played to that theme?
You know, I wish I could say that's true.
Sounds great.
It sounds awesome. We could go with that.
Okay, cool. I'll take that as a no. Okay. Okay. So often it's you compose something and it feels good, and then you'll decide on a title. It could be something that the song suggests, or is Susan completely abstract with it?
No, you know, but a lot of times we sit there and we'll listen together and on the album. And, you know, you have to put yourself, your emotions into the song.
Sure.
Once you start feeling the song, which I always, I mean, she does too, then you come up with a title. Sometimes the titles might sound stupid and go, I don't think it's a good one. How about this one? Oh, I don't like that one. And we might throw around maybe a few, you know, here and there, but then we'll actually come up with something. Oh, that sounds perfect. Like for, you get Dance of the Veils, for instance.
Yes, yes.
If you heard the song Dance of the Veils, you're going to go, oh, of course. Mm. It's got to be called that. What else are you going to call it, you know? Same with some of these other ones, like Wind Traveler, Shapeshifters, you know. These are songs that, yeah, that makes sense. It really does.
They all seem to be connected, though, to mm-hmm. some sort of Native American folklore or legend.
Right.
I often ask about the flow of the album and how that process goes. So with this new disc, did you start by just recording several songs and then deciding what kicks things off well?
Yes.
Yeah, that's okay. True.
When every album that I've done, we record in random. And there's no flow as far as recording it because mm-hmm. we're recording songs. But when I'm all done recording, I'll listen to all the songs. I put what flows. That's my own. That's like putting the highlights on a painting. That's what I liken it to. You know, every time you do a painting, your painting's not done until you do your highlights. The highlights can make and break a painting. It really can. I mean, I've seen paintings that have no highlights, and it's not a painting. It looks terrible. Mm. But it could be a nice executed painting. But what I do is I go back and do my highlights. That's the same thing I do with my albums. So there's no difference. It's the same thing.
Nice. Wow, that's a great way of looking at that. And you said this has been the same for all of your albums. You've never really decided, okay, here's going to be the opener.
Yeah, and you know, like when I was working with Michael Mucklow, I mean, that was a little different. I mean, me and him would both collaborate, and we would say, how do you want to start this off? You know, you want to start off fast, slow. I mean, so we would talk about it. It wasn't always me doing it, but I'm referring to my solo albums.
All right, sure. I'm speaking with Stephen Rushingwind with music from his latest disc, Keeper of Secrets. More at StephenRushingwindMusic.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Let's step away from music just briefly because we spoke of you being a painter earlier. Now, again, you can see the paintings, in addition to connect with all the music, at StephenRushingwindMusic.com. There's also a tab, you'll go down there, it's one of your cacti paintings, if I remember right. You click on that, you'll go to the paintings. There are some houses, some cacti, some glimpses of what a person sees around them. But my favorites are always the paintings of Jif Peanut Butter and... I believe Paprika, and do you have a Tapatio painting out there somewhere?
Yeah,
as well?
I do. Yeah, there is one out there.
And dillweed or something, maybe not. But so why these kinds of things? Again, this is something if you look around, yeah, it's right there in front of you maybe, but often we don't think of a still life with McCormick spices, you know?
You know, these are things that are passed up on every day. I mean, we pass them up by our shelves, our tables. Nobody pays any attention to them. These are just things that just sit there. I was Campbell's soups with a can opener or a Jif with a knife. We make peanut butter and jelly. We'd eat a jar of the peanut butter sitting there with a dirty knife. And then we just walk away. But if you really stop and look at these things, and if you put like a shadow behind it or some kind of a dramatic lighting, it could be actually beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I did a can of Spam once, and it was just Spam, you know. But but I sent it to the Spam Corporation, and you know, and they sent me two cases of Spam and a T-shirt and a mug. It's like, you know, they're very generous over there. So
did that inspire you to start painting maybe stone IPAs or something like that?
That's on the next list right there.
Sweet. Now back to music, but not quite completely with this album. You do workshops in the area. I mean,
yes.
Across the country, but specific to us, it's not a surprise for maybe Claremont or Upland or Pomona or something. Talk about what these workshops are, sort of an introductory and something more advanced. You do different things.
Matter of fact, I got one this Saturday, the 29th. What I do is I call it journaling with the flute. Hmm. What I do is people that go into my workshop, it includes a flute and instruction for 2 hours. And what I do is I teach people how to journal with their flute, not necessarily just play. Journaling meaning, like when you're out with a pad and paper and you're journaling, you're talking, you're having like my dear diary kind of a thing, you know. And then today is a beautiful day, the clouds are here, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Flute is kind of similar. You can look at a tree and swaying, you can, maybe there's a deer out there and you're playing the flute and you come up with a song. At that moment, you have a little riff or something in your flute. Later on down the road, you play that same riff and you go, oh, yeah, I remember that deer, that same, it was a beautiful day. It's muscle memory, of course, but you can use your flute to journal. It's like different places you go to a river and you hear in the river and you're playing the music, you play a song for the river. But you can remember those songs down the road, even if it's even close to what you did, and still reminisce about that time you were there or with your family or with a group, whatever. So that's what journaling's all about. The first workshop, teach them scales, how to play the scales, talk about the journaling, how it helps you spiritually, meditates. And then the second one is, I call it continuing the flute. I don't like calling it advanced.
Because, 102.
Because, yeah, it's people think, oh, I got to be advanced. I'm just learning. Well, no, you can still go on and continue the journey. That's basically what I like to call it, the second one.
Well, again, really cool. And where is this one going to be?
This one's going to be at Buddha Mouse in Claremont. And I do have other ones coming up, too, down the road that I'll be announcing later.
And that'll be at StephenRushingWindMusic.com.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Well, then back to the music and the newest disc, Keeper of Secrets, or Rushing Wind, Keeper of Secrets. 5 nominations for this year's NAMMYs. Again, Artist of the Year, Flutist of the Year, Best New Age Recording, Best Instrumental Recording, and Best Video, the video being for the song Rushing Wind. I suppose we may be getting close to wrapping, but I asked you something very similar regarding the beginning of the disc. And so the same thing with wrapping the disc. Ceremonial Fires in this case. And again, this may be a chicken or the egg. Did you have a piece that felt right to close things? Or did you have 98% of the disc and think, I need a good way to close this. I need a good way to wrap this.
No, I mean, Ceremonial Fires, what I wanted to do is I wanted to start off kind of mellow, but kind of go into a crescendo, rushing wind, and then, you know, Dances of the Veils and things like that. And then kind of like go into like Sienna Breeze, being that it's a flute only, Ceremonial Fires, kind of ending it on a nice note. Okay. That's basically what I like to do, is I like people to sit there when they're done, that they feel, oh, it can start over and you're still feeling good. It's like, not like you have to turn it off. Okay, I'm done with the album.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I use this to go to sleep sometimes with, because I know I sleep well because there's 14 songs. It's a long album. So when I get the Aqua Sage, the very first one, when I get to the second song, if I'm still hearing it in the 8th song, I'm not sleeping very well, because usually I don't wake up until I hear it like the 13th, 14th song.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, I had a good nap.
I've often used Bridge.
Bridge is good too.
And either Among the Ancients or Ancient Elements. There's one of those I use.
Ancient Elements probably the one. Yeah.
Probably.
That's got it.
But then there's some of your discs that are very much active listening for me. Is it Red Beaten Path, of course. But
yeah, Fuego.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, Fuego. The voting for the NAMMYs, this is for the public. It's not just this board of 8 people that are really voting and holding everybody's fate in their hands. This is open to the public.
Yes.
Do you happen to know the site off the top of your head?
Yeah, if you go to NativeAmericanMusicAwards.com, you're going to find it. There is a where it says Vote Now. You click on that link, and it'll take you to the Survey Monkey, they call it. And what it is that you go to Survey Monkey, and then you start, there you put your name. It's really mild. You just put your name and your address. They just want to know where people are voting from, basically. You don't have to put your social security number or anything like that in there. And then you just start voting, you know, and it starts off. I think first category is Artist of the Year.
Okay. Personally, I hope that Steve sweeps it.
That doesn't happen very often.
I do have to say, though, that it's, one, just an honor to have the 5 nominations, but two, some of these folks that you're, quote, up against, I can't really say up against is not the right word, because you're really sharing moments.
I don't like using up against either.
Cody Blackbird, he's another wonderful flutist out there
he's excellent.
Support.
He's excellent. And, you know, I mean, up against it, it's kind of a, like, right now I'm If you want to say up against, well, then I'm up against Jan Michael Looking Wolf. He's another high spirit flute artist.
Okay.
Me and him are up against each other, but we talk to each other all the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird because if you lose, you know, it's not about losing. It's about being there, supporting. I mean, I've had 3 nominations for Fuego last year and I didn't get one win. No wins. So for me, it's not about, you know, of course we want to win. I mean, who doesn't?
Sure.
But you're there and you're with your friends. Yeah. So if you lose, you're losing to your friends. It's not like, oh my gosh, I deserved better than he did. You know,
it's not so much that you lost, but rather your friend won. So you're happy for somebody.
Yeah, especially when Jan wins, because it's a win-win for us, because it's a high spirit flute artist that wins.
So nice.
It kind of works out in good ways. I mean, I've done this for so long. I've lost more than I've won.
Okay, sure.
And you know, it's like anybody else in the business. I mean, you look at some of these actors that, you know, you see them at the Academy Awards and one of them's going to win and 4 of them going to lose.
Yep.
And you know, they just sit there, you know, of course they're disappointed. You know, nobody's going to be up jumping up in joy. Hey, I just lost. But at the same time, you know, you have to just accept it, you know, and move on. You know, it's okay.
I think this may be more true in not only the music industry, but especially this music industry we're talking about with the Native American flute and all.
Right.
Because these folks come together, it's not so much being up against each other. When you come together, there's an opportunity for collaboration or, you know, see how this person does the thing.
Definitely. And, you know, and this album's also submitted in the Grammys, too. It looks like I have a good, strong chance of being in one of the categories that's designed for the Native American flute. So I got my fingers crossed still. We haven't got the ballots out yet, so we don't know exactly. Sometimes you enter into a certain category, and then all of a sudden they kick you out and put you in something else. This is more new agey, so they put you in new age.
Sure.
It happens. But if you make your category, it's wonderful. So far, my fingers are crossed. If I get into the Grammys, now that's not a public voting thing. That's something that's totally out of your hands.
Yep. Yeah. You know? Well, Steve, I greatly appreciate your time. You might have just qualified for the 5-timers club. I'm not sure. We'll have to work that out. I'll get the punch cards going again and see what kind of mug or t-shirt you end up with.
But well, there you go.
Yeah. But thank you for your time. This is always fun to do this, but also, I appreciate you not only sharing the word and this music with me, but this really gives me an opportunity to spread this kind of word and this kind of music. And that's exciting for me as well. So I have to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate it. It's always an honor to be hanging out with you and do these interviews. I love it. It's something I look forward to. And 5 times, yeah, that's probably why they call me Rush Human, because I just got so much to talk about, David.
He who talks too much. Rushing wind sounds like a breeze going by, but it actually infers one who talks too much.
One who talks too much, exactly.
Beautiful. I'm closing with that one. That was Stephen Rushing Wind with music from his latest disc, Keeper of Secrets. Once again, more at StephenRushingWindMusic.com, including a link to where the public can vote for any of the artists nominated for this year's Nammies. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Steve Rushingwind and to Sue Rajinsky of Place Performance. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Shireen Awad, and KVCR General Manager Keith Birkfeld. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.